You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hey, Chris, what are you drinking there?
Oh, you never seen one of these before?
No, what is that?
Oh, man, this is a brewery in Austin, Circle Brewing. They're right near my house, right up on Breaker Road. They got their own brewery with a bunch of stuff. This is actually, you're gonna think I'm lying. This is, I think, the best American Hefeweizen I've ever had, Circle Brewer.
Get out.
It's made in America. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. That's high praise coming from you.
Well, take a sip of this thing. Try that.
All right, let me see.
No. That wasn't the Hefeweizen. That was the IPA.
Yeah, no, that was the Ladybird.
Yeah, that's good, too. Man, they make a lot of good beers. And like I said, you can come visit them at their tap room right down the street here from me on Breaker Lane. It's delicious stuff, and they actually became the sponsor for the website, OneOfUs.net.
Wow, good guys, and they live right down the street from here?
They certainly do, and you can even get their beer in convenience stores now.
Ah, convenience store. I'm going to just walk over to Circle.
OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net, keep the site and all of our great shows going, and get some terrific bonus content as well. This is the story of a man in a world full of blocks who had to, after he had children, give up on his dreams, and now he lives a lonely, solitary life, slowly going into dementia where he can't find his pants.
Is this you recording with us?
Kind of is both. No, I was actually found that aspect of it depressing, because, you know, if you've seen the first Lego movie, it's like, oh, okay, kids, you can play with my toys. And this movie starts off with
freezing.
These kids have destroyed his toys. They have devastated years worth of careful work, and now he's just a lost man. He's
shouting so lost. Off-screen.
He's so lost. He doesn't even appear on screen at any point. We are talking about, like I said, the Lego Movie 2, the second part. This does, although not directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, they have story by, produced by, and screenplay by credit here. So at least with the screenplay by, I give them a little more credit than for the Ninjago movie, which they decidedly did not, and Lego Batman movie, which I believe they did write, or at least one of them was on the screenplay.
Their toes and fingers were in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why that one's generally above passable.
Yeah.
But this one is directed by Mike Mitchell, who you guys were kind of naming off some of his movies earlier, but hey, I always give him credit for...
He's had Peaks and Valleys.
Yeah. Maker of Monkey Bone.
Yeah, and Sky High.
Yeah,
Sky High was great. But yeah, this Lego Movie 2 obviously had very high anticipations. The first movie was a huge success. In fact, they so want to make sure people don't forget that the first movie is good that they put it up for free on YouTube, the entire movie, and been putting out ads saying, don't forget how great Lego Movie was. Watch it now.
The thing that Lego Movie has that you're not going to find in this one is Lego Movie was so out of left field. Nobody really expected it. I remember us, you know, when we went in, it was a morning screening, and we're just kind of like, all right, we're going to go see a kid's movie, and, you know, this hey, it's got a good voice cast. And when we walked out, I thought Elliot was going to, like, explode in ecstasy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we were all just like, holy shit, where the fuck did that come from? Well, that was great.
I remember they had already done Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which was on no one's radar.
Yeah, that
was spectacular. And I remember Martin and I talking about how, you know, this one has a shot. Those guys took a property nobody gave a shit about that looked really crappy.
I think Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is one of the few movies I literally rolled in the aisles. I fell out of my seat that I was laughing so.
Oh, yeah, I adore that movie.
Yeah. And yeah, they're the kings of bad idea into good movie.
That being said, remember Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2? No, you don't, because it fucking sucked.
And they were only executive producers on that one.
Which
is what worried me a little bit about this one, because the simple fact they were taking at least as much of a step back out of the director's chair made me go, oh, and plus there's been some other difficulties with them lately. Like, I don't know whose fault Solo, a Star Wars movie, is in terms of them being fired from it over halfway through filming the thing. I can't really see it was them, it's Kathleen Kennedy. I wasn't there. I've heard a lot of conflicting stories, but that's a troublesome thing to hear about directors that you like.
Yeah. Marvel also fired Edgar Wright.
I feel like it could also be an encouraging thing to hear about a director is like they stood their ground on their creativity and like I mean, the track record speaks for itself. They're batting really good averages.
Their batting average is pretty spectacular, all things considered. So I did go into this with a certain amount of confidence. Before we get started, who is talking about this movie? There's me, Chris.
Ben.
Alan.
Bo.
Bo, returning to the movie reviews after, God, when was the last movie you reviewed?
Sometime in 2018.
I think it was Sisters Brothers.
I think that's a good point to stick a pin in it, if nothing else.
Huh? So it has been 5 years since the first film. In other words, the kids have grown up.
A little.
Yeah, a little bit. Sure. Finn is now, like, decidedly on the cusp of teenagerdom.
We knew the son's name.
And now he has a little sister that he is it's very clear, even though it's much more overt later in the film, you can figure it out super early in the movie. What's happening is suddenly a bunch of very childish Duplos, which are like Legos for little kids, appear in the Lego village of awesomeness and start destroying everything with absurdity and cuteness. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, I think we can all kind of read right
into Well, and they alluded it to at the end of the first movie. It was like, well, now that I've let you do this, you're going to have to let your sister chip in and
Duplo blocks
make the first appearance. And this, like, this starts right up with that again, and the conceit is that went on for 5 years, and it has destroyed the Lego civilization heretofore known.
So now
everything is not awesome
now
anymore.
We get a series of post-apocalyptic jokes.
Yes,
which is,
because these kids have the building skills of a god, because evidently Will Ferrell's building genes just go down to both generations.
Well, you know, kids, have you ever put one in front of a computer and watched them blow you away inside of like a week in your knowledge?
That's pretty fair.
Just saying. But yeah, he's got, instead of Bricksburg, it's now Apocalypseburg, with a bunch of, like I said, references to post-apocalyptic stuff, including one I really appreciated, Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And occasionally cutesy aliens involve. And the one person who just can't be swayed by the darkness of it all, of course, is Master Builder Emmett Brickowski, voiced by Chris Pratt, who is still arguing that everything is awesome, despite everyone scowling at him. But all his friends are abducted by a mysterious wingsuit alien who takes them with her into a spaceship, including his lady, Wildstyle, played voiced by Elizabeth Banks. And he's like, okay, I'm on a mission to go save them. And so, to make a long story short, he takes a trip through the universe, which is to say the door going upstairs to the sister's room, where all sorts of wackiness ensues. And along the way, he meets basically Chris Pratt as
Kurt Russell.
It's a combination of his Guardians of the Galaxy.
Since the last Lego movie, essentially. His career since
He's Chris Pratt with the Guardians of the Galaxy character plus his Jurassic Park world.
The best version of Raptors ever.
And he is doing a pretty dead-on Kurt Russell impression too.
Yeah.
Which is another shout-out.
Which just made me think, are you talking lower? No, this is how I always talk. No, you're definitely talking lower. And they team up to try and save their friends who are slowly becoming brainwashed by the glittery world of the Sistar system.
Where the movie changes into a surprise musical written by John LaJoy, of Show Me Your Genitals.
Okay, what?
The guy who played Taco in The League, he has a song, because he's a YouTube series, well, he had a YouTube channel, and he has a song that everybody knows him for, which is Show Me Your Genitals, where he's making fun of rap lyrics for Show Me Your Tits and Show Me Your Pussy.
Wow, I did not know.
And it's just him
this.
Rapping, Show Me Your Genitals, Your Genitals.
He wrote the music for this?
Yes, he was credited as a songwriter for every song in this movie.
Well, if that song caught on, which is a very simple message, this movie certainly glommed onto that with the, like, whereas Everything is Awesome was clearly the big song from the first one. The original movie was so on the, this one is so on the nose with its big song is this song will get stuck in your head.
Yeah. Which is kind of fits the whole comedy motif of this movie.
Right.
I thought the music in general in this movie is really good. There's a couple numbers, like straight up musical numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, all the songs are great.
It does feel like there was a lot more music in this than the first
one. Well, they do call it out with the first real song that's not Everything is Awesome, that, oh shit, is this a musical? Damn it.
Yeah.
Even so, everything does come back around to the Everything is Awesome song as the movie decides to become emotional and connect more to what its underlying message is in the real world in the third act.
Play to your strengths.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
Play to your strengths.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, speaking on that, I really like that, because at the end of the last movie, the big reveal was Will Ferrell's old dad, and this is the kids playing. And that was, like, kind of the emotional resonance of that. They didn't really tip that hat in the beginning of that movie. And since that's already been shown throughout this movie, it's very clearly based on, like, these kids playing with them. It's shown very early on, and throughout the movie, it kind of breaks that third wall inside the movie, like fourth wall inside the movie in the movie.
It has a lot less need to cover up that as a secret ending than what the first one did, where, this is actually has a whole other level to it. This one is like, we already know it does, so the movie constantly alludes to it.
Right, and it kind of plays with that. It's smart. It's smart to do that after they introduce that into the world.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's the only way really, you could have gone.
It's the only way they could have gone without
nail it too,
like, seeming idiotic.
I mean, before they make the spaceship that Rex has, the real spaceship, like, it's pretty clear it's supposed to be the kid running with Emmett in his hand because the spaceship looks like a fist. And it's like, all right, that's subtle and it's really kind of brilliant. Then they also have a really great Twilight Zone reference with the door because you have to go from the basement up through the door. It's like, all right.
Well, Twilight Zone and 2001.
And Stargate.
And Stargate. There's some Stargate stuff in there. What was it? The Stairgate.
Stairgate,
I like that.
And that's, you know, that's something that the first movie did that this movie successfully does is it is constantly throwing Easter eggs at you. And, you know, it's not as shotgun blast as the first one because, like, man, you could barely see a frame of that without catching something. But it's definitely rich in this. And, you know, around every corner is a little bit there. You're gonna go, that's all you did there.
But I will make the argument, though, that and this is, like, hardly their fault because they're following up this movie that almost started the trend of heavy meta referencing in films.
Sure.
And now everyone has copied them for all these years to the point where we have gone way past that plateau and are now in the sort of, like, having meta comedy exhaustion. And despite the fact these are good, they're well-written meta jokes, there is a point where I'm like, okay, I'm just a little tired of this type of humor at this point. And what do you respect? They couldn't not do that in this movie. But I do agree that reducing it was the right decision.
Yeah, they reined it in, and it works for the most part.
And
unless if that's what you're going in for, and maybe it is, you might want to dial down those expectations.
Yeah, and with the meta jokes, like, it's one thing in, I don't know, so many other animated movies where a character will make a reference to something in the real world out of nowhere. And this, like, at least we know that these are kids playing with these things and it's their imagination. Like, this kid maybe just saw Back to the Future, so he's gonna, like, integrate that into his playing or whatever. And like, it's like, oh, it's a movie that
they're not really winking at you.
Yeah,
they're basically saying, yeah, of course we have a TARDIS. Yeah. It's fucking Lego.
Yeah. And there's an excuse for the meta nature of it. Some of them are definitely outside of that world, but it exists within like the realms
of the
movie.
There's some good ones that are outside the world, like where they're like, we sent all of our best heroes, and so the DC guys going, Marvel won't return our call, so we didn't have anyone else.
There's a couple digs at Marvel, which maybe was influenced slightly by Chris Pratt being a little pissed at Marvel himself for the way they treated James Gunn along with the rest of the cast. But overall, I mean, it's not wildly over. But I mean, even the Chris Pratt, the whole like fact that he's halfway playing his Guardians of the Galaxy character and some digs at how ridiculous that character is on some level felt like a little under the cover DC.
Well,
DC / Warner Brothers going like, yeah, we got to get these.
There's literally a joke where the guy's like, I'm just like you with ruggish good looks. I was currently hidden under some baby fat, which is exactly like after this movie, after you get Guardians and then Jessica Girl, you become this like chiseled, handsome man, leading man, which is like not who he was when he did the first Lego movie.
Which is to say, much like the first film and all the movies that have been made by these writers, there's a lot that is there for the adults. There's a lot of jokes that kids are probably just not even, little kids aren't even going to get. Mm-hmm. But being a Lord and Miller film, it's also like a shotgun blast of crazy, colorful, nonstop shit to look at the screen that never stops moving and evolving and changing. Yeah. So little kids will also be entertained by the fact that it is. It's just even more so than the first one. This is kind of insane to look at.
Yeah.
To the point where I found it a little discordant. It was like I was having, we were like, it just got so surreal from like the point they reached the Sistar system on that I was like, I don't even know what's happening. It's still fun, but
I was digging it. Yeah. I was along for the ride. Yeah,
I think they made it properly bright, where it's supposed to be like, you know, it's supposed to be the post-apocalypse, and the boy, the son, he's kind of in that phase where he's like, I need to tough it up and be a cool adult guy now, watching action movies.
He's being a shitty early teenager, and the sisters is far more involved in pop music and glitter. At
right.
This
she
point.
Still has, you know, that personality where it's like, cool, let's just be adventurous and fun, which hopefully you get back when you get older. Otherwise, you just become a dour adult.
So joining the cast as new voice actors here is Tiffany Haddish, playing Queen Whatevra Wanabi, who is a shape-shifting Duplo alien queen who wants to marry Batman.
And the best mm-hmm. I've ever liked Tiffany Haddish.
Wasn't she in something? She was in something else that was really good.
I'm a pretty consistent fan of her. I think she's good and stuff.
I don't think I've disliked her per se. I mean, maybe she's been in like I don't know.
Not all of her movies are good, but she's right, always like fairly like a bright spot in them.
And then Stephanie Beatrice plays General Beatrice. Thank you. Because she's from
Brooklyn,
Argentina.
From
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, who of course plays Rosa Diaz. I didn't realize that was her.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Diaz.
Love her. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And she did. You know, both the voice of both the augmented and real voice of the character.
She is the sort of the number one, the big and the enforcer space woman like character for the queen of the other dimension. And then lastly, joining the cast is Maya Rudolph, who actually plays the real life mom of the kids. Because one of them had to show up, and Will Ferrell couldn't be bothered to be anything but an off-screen voice.
Let me also say another reasonably big character is kind of the butler to the queen is Richard Ayoade as the ice cream cone.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh, it is Richard Ayoade. That fits perfectly for that character. I was really worried they would have gotten James Corden or somebody else I hate.
I wasn't sure it was him. I was like trying to decide if it was him or... what's the guy who was on The Office, the original British Office?
Well, Ricky Gervais.
No, the other one.
Oh, Martin Freeman?
No.
The other one.
What is his name?
What, the weird-looking
one? The lanky one?
Oh, the Dwight Schrute guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. But yeah, he was also in Pirates of the Caribbean.
And he's in the Portal 2. He does the voice of the robots. Yeah, blanking out his name.
That would have been fun. I mean, the cast of Roll is... is great. You know, as I mentioned, they had the Justice League where they got at least half the Justice League actors to come in.
Yeah, there's Gal Gadot. I mean, they're all very briefly in it, but Gal Gadot... Really?
It's really Gal Gadot.
Yeah. Is it? Okay. Is Wonder Woman, Jason Momoa's Aquaman, where he, of course, gets to go, woo!
Yeah. Where he's basically exactly what we said in our review is why he's good in that movie.
Margot Robbie gets one line as Harley Quinn. Ike Barinholtz is Lex Luthor, which made me go... Are you guys casting Ike Barinholtz as Lex Luthor in the future?
It's an interesting choice.
It is. And then Jonah Hill is as Green Lantern, who they're probably not casting as Green Lantern.
No, but it's even Channing Tatum, who they work with on 21 Jump Street.
Channing Tatum is Superman, who seems like if they were going to continue to do animated... the DC Animated Universe movies, and be like, hey, Tatum did a pretty good job with the voice of Superman. Just think about telling it.
Basically, since 21 Jump Street has basically been on a path where I'm like, I like you in a lot of things. He doesn't
But
look
you're
like
never going to be Gambit, so stop it.
No.
You were never meant. No one wants to hear you do a Cajun accent.
I don't think anyone wants to see a Gambit.
If you want to direct that movie, go ahead and direct it, but please don't star in it.
Yeah, don't star in it. Yeah, you want to direct it? I'm all for you, bro. You do it.
I
believe in
adventure. Show us what chops you got. We'll be happy.
I totally can see him as a superhero, just not Gambit.
Oh, yeah.
No, well, not a lot of characters, but definitely not Gambit. Anyway, there's obviously a huge cast of recognizable names that I'm not going to go through everyone. I mean, it's like a who's who of people. Who wouldn't want to be a voice in the Lego movie? And there's, I mean, it's most of these people get one or two lines, but still.
And Noel Fielding played the sparkly vampire guy.
Exactly Noel Fielding. You're right.
And Noel Fielding playing a sparkly vampire has pretty much been his career course up to this point.
His whole life has been leading up to being a sparkly vampire guy.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't get Robert Pattinson probably because he just went, fuck you.
He has no
I'm a serious actor now. I don't do sparkly vampire.
Hasn't Noel Fielding been playing a sparkly vampire since the IT Crowd?
I mean, arguably he's playing one in The Great British Bake Off because he's playing himself.
I've been actually rewatching that show with my wife, who had not actually seen but an episode or here or there. And that show is even funnier the second time you see it. Because if you never watch The IT Crowd, it really is like, it's only what, like four short British seasons?
Yeah.
And it is just laugh out loud funny.
Have you gotten to the pedophile season yet?
Not with her, but we've been kind of dancing around.
Good time.
Oh, yeah, and Bruce Willis as himself.
Yes.
In a joke that maybe goes on one joke too.
I don't know. I still laughed at it the second time. And I will say, I mentioned the Raptors earlier. I had Bo next to me, and I'm pretty sure Bo laughed at most of the Raptor jokes with me as well.
Yeah, there are Velociraptors as characters in this movie.
There's subtitles, lots of and they them. Have the best subtitles, which yeah. is like, this is what I wanted, like, what they think minions do or what these raptors actually succeed at.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Ben, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, I just generally really enjoyed this whole movie. I can say it might be a small step down from the first one, partially just because they hit so many of the Lego jokes so perfectly, including I think they made a Duplo joke offhand in the first one. But this one, I feel like they nail it a lot. They nail the heart of, you know, the family dynamic, which was part of the big part of the first one, why that worked as well, where it's like, yes, this is exactly what playing with Legos was like for me, where it's like, yes, this is the fun toy, and this is the thing where all my imagination can be put into anything I want to. And then,
it's also painful when you accidentally step on one.
Yes. But, yeah, overall, I do think there's some parts where it slows down. There's a twist in the movie. You can kind of see it coming, and then it kind of feels like they dragged on the last bit a little bit longer than I felt they maybe needed to, but I didn't think it really hindered the movie. Overall, I think it's really probably the best thing you can take your kids.
They kind of did that in the first one.
That too, yeah. So, I mean, if you have kids, like, this is the movie you take them to, especially if you've already seen The Kid Who Would Be King. Take them to see this.
Yeah, but no one did, assholes.
That's why I had to mention it, because you motherfuckers don't take your children to see good movies.
Yeah, this is why we can't have nice things. You won't give Joe Cornish movies your money. What is wrong with
you? That's actually all I want people to do, is just go give Joe Cornish movies money so we get more from him. Yes. Anyway, sorry. Lego Movie 2.
Totally different rant.
Really great, really fun time. Even the end credits, again, were great. So I give it 8.5 out of 10 Lego bricks that feel worse than childbirth.
Alan?
Yeah, I actually think the only thing this movie doesn't have going for it that the first Lego movie did is the element of surprise, is what Bo was saying earlier, I think, before we started. Because I think it's just as good, and it hits all the emotional resonant points. The comedy's on point. The voice cast is great. The action scenes are great, and both movies really. Because when there's a Lego movie, everyone rolled their eyes like, "Oh, great corporate branding bullshit." But what Lego's about, like, the use of your imagination, like a tactile use of your imagination, and the movies really translate that well and get a lot of mileage out of, like, comedy and story. And just visually, I really loved it. I'm going 10,000 piece Legos.
I have no idea.
10,000 piece Lego set. Something like that.
Something like that.
A bunch of Legos.
One of those sets.
Shit ton of Legos.
That's like a 64 box of Crayola.
All the Legos.
Bo.
Absolutely agree with Alan in the movie has a lot of expectations to overcome, and I think by and large it does a good job of clearing those hurdles. Ultimately, it doesn't have that extra jolt that the first one did of being a complete surprise, but I think they're really loyal to the source material. They expand the universe, the jokes and the laughs keep rolling, the references work. All across the board, high marks. You know, maybe a little teensy-weensy bit schmaltier than the first, but I forgive that because I think ultimately the message is good, which is, you know, don't be shitty to your siblings. They're the only ones you have.
And don't get super emo in your teens.
Yeah, and there's a handful of jokes in here, which I think they milk a little bit too much, but nothing too painful. Like, you know, it almost gets to the annoying point and then they move on and I'm fine. This is definitely, you know, great for your kids. And if you enjoyed the first one, you're going to be able to go to this and derive at least a couple of yucks out of it, if nothing else. I give it a good 8.5 of those little one-dot Lego pieces that can fucking get lost and you never find and you can't complete.
Especially
the fucking thing.
They give the little translucent ones. They were always the one-dot pieces because they were supposed to be headlights or something.
Those fuck you, Denmark. Go fuck yourself.
All right, so you guys definitely liked this a little bit more than I did. I still really did enjoy it. I think what you were saying, Bo, the whole, like, it's without that extra jolt of surprise, there's like something missing, but you felt they still did, they accomplished it on the whole. I felt like they did as good a job as they probably could have done. I think that jolt was a big part of the success of the first movie, was just surprised that this was as good as it was at all. We were all like looking around like, I'm not the only one seeing this, right? Like this, y'all are liking this too, right?
Sure.
Like just kind of shocked, as well as the fact that, like I said, the whole meta referencing humor thing is kind of, we're kind of getting a little tired of it. And even this is like, it does it good most of the time, but even then there's a lot of sort of like zero reaction jokes in this. I remember laughing so hard my stomach hurt in the first one. And this one I just kind of consistently chuckled through the entire film. I always had a smile on my face. There's a lot to really enjoy here for sure. And as well, there's the element that I didn't feel some, in fact, feel some pathos from this in the third act as it started getting really into the sister-brother relationship, because I myself had a very contentious relationship with my little sister. I definitely treated her a lot shittier than she ever deserved to be treated as. And she just wanted to play with me and be friends. And
please, Chris, lie down on the couch and tell us more.
And then I went on to become an emo goth. So, you know, it made me think about that stuff to some level, which is probably distracting the movie itself, but I felt a little extra boost of pathos going, like feeling bad about how badly I treated my sister growing up, who is now one of my best friends and a wonderful human being.
Well, that's the long game she's played.
Yeah, right. She was like, "I'll get there eventually." Little does Chris know, I've actually been murdering homeless people.
Well, she's just after your Legos when you die.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I mean, it's very cute. There's really good voice acting. I had some problems with the sound mixing at points because they had trouble making things clear over the soundtrack or the special effects at
that
points.
That could be the theater.
Yeah,
we had a horrible crying baby, and
we did have a horrible
people
crying
that,
baby.
And this is coming from me, had some of the most annoying laughter I've ever heard.
We had one of those guys, and it hasn't happened for a while. We used to regularly get this one guy at the screenings who'd be the dude, and long after everybody else was done laughing, he'd be the guy who suddenly would go, ha, 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 ha! And you're like, what the fuck was that?
The stroke was hard.
Yeah, and we have one of those guys at this screening. But, I mean, this is, it's better than okay. It's good. And I think a lot of people are going to like it a lot.
It's better than bad. It's good.
I think a lot of people are going to like this a lot more than I did. I actually really did like the songs, and I'll give it full points for, once again, these guys making one of the best end credit sequences out there.
Oh, yeah,
nobody does end credit sequences like the Lord Miller, and this is another one. Like, do not get up out of your seats.
And there's a special musical guest that I won't give you the spoilers for.
Which is really an enjoyable closing song.
There's the closing song, which is sort of like, remind me of Commentary, the musical on Dr. Horrible.
Right,
it's like a closing song about the credits, which I was like, this is awesome, and I love it so much, and I want it to never end. But, I wish I liked this, like, slightly more than I did. And maybe I will a second time. There's certainly expectations going in. But as it is, I give it 7.5 out of 10 pools of glitter vomit. Which probably was my biggest laugh in the whole movie, by the way.
No, I heard you. You basically, like, suddenly just, like, exploded next to me.
I did. If I had gagged, I would have given out glitter vomit. It was like, I thought that was funny. I don't even know why.
Hello!